Yemen is back in the news, and well, it's always been in the news, but the focus is hopefully with things dampening down a little bit in Syria, that the world media and people can look at what's happening in Yemen, and with the hopes that that also could wind down as well. What is the latest from Yemen?
Well, it's sort of interesting. I mean, yeah, you say it's going to wind down, but no, in reality, you know, everyone has been diverted to the Rohingya. And actually, Afra Daga, who's a Syrian commentator and journalist, she wrote a very good piece in the Duran, I think, basically saying, you know, like everyone now is focused on the Rohingya, but nobody is outraged about what has been happening for over 2 years in Yemen, which is effectively the ethnic cleansing of predominantly the Shia communities inside Yemen. But of the entire Yemeni population, or those at least who are resisting Saudi coalition hegemony and colonization, which of course we know is governed by the US, the UK, and the EU, but the US and the UK primarily. And I know from Mohammed al-Wazir of ArdwaRights.org, who's at the UN right now, advocating, which he has been for the last 2 years, an independent commission of inquiry to actually investigate the war crimes that are being committed on both sides inside Yemen. But of course, you know, the UN has basically prevaricated and refused to allow that to go ahead. In fact, the only commission of inquiry is the National Commission of Inquiry, which is headed up by the fugitive, illegitimate president, ex-president Mansour Hadi. So, no, you know, at the moment, basically what's going on, we're seeing in the last few days alone, again, Saudi coalition bombing of civilian areas. But an interesting development, and I was trying to find out a bit more about it, because it's come through a single Yemen media outlet, but it is one that I would consider to be very reliable. I have asked around, particularly with Mohammed al-Wazir, to see if he can get any confirmation of it. But basically, there are reports coming in that British officials have met with Saudi officials in the port of Aden. And the report goes on to say that the UK is looking at potentially re-establishing a naval or military base in Aden. Now, I spoke to Andrew Korobiko very quickly before I came on to see what he thought of that idea. He said that he felt it was unlikely they would set up a base because they already have a base. Obviously, they set one up in Bahrain in 67 when they actually left Aden, because, of course, the British had a presence in Yemen, in Aden, for I think it was over 120 years. And they withdrew in November 67, and they set up a base in Bahrain at the time. But what is interesting, there does seem to be, I mean, according to this report, there are definite negotiations going on between Britain, the government in exile, Mansour Hadi, which is effectively Saudi Arabia. And of course, we know that Britain has been supplying, certainly under Cameron, I think over or almost $4 billion worth of arms to Saudi Arabia to basically carry out its genocidal war of aggression against the Yemeni people. Now, I looked into it. There is a complete media blackout on this. Complete. I mean, I literally cannot find a thing, except for 4 days ago in The Independent, a report about Michael Fallon, who basically made the statement, Britain will spread its wings across the world with increased arms and equipment exports after Brexit. And it then goes on to talk about, he's addressing the world's largest arms fair in London. He outlined his vision for the UK to take a bigger share of the international defense market and claimed demand was going through the roof because of increasing war and terror. Hailing programs to build frigates, that's interesting, marine patrol aircraft and the F-35 fighter jet, the defense secretary claimed the industry could strengthen international alliances. So he's obviously talking about Britain spreading its military industrial complex wings That combined with the report from inside Yemen that they have definitely been present in Aden and are discussing the potential for a military base or some kind of military or naval presence there. And of course, that entire Gulf of Aden, we know from various sources, but including WikiLeaks, that there was already a project in place to run the pipeline from the Al Jawf oil and gas pipelines to the north of Yemen on the border with Saudi Arabia down to the south to avoid using the Bab al-Mandeb Straits, which of course are under Yemeni control, or the Straits of Hormuz, which are under Iranian control. So from a lot of perspectives, it would make sense for Britain to be increasing its military involvement in the area. But I can't confirm for certain, but certainly this report is coming from a reliable enough source for it to kind of make me look further into it.
Right. Well, Vanessa, I'm going to mention something here because this is an interesting point you make. It's extremely fishy because back in 2015, Philip Hammond was the defense secretary then. Now you mentioned Bahrain, but in 2015, he went, I've got a picture of him in front of me here with spade in hand he was foreign minister at the time, not defense secretary, with the Bahraini foreign minister, also with spade in hand, as they began construction, or symbolically at least, on what was being described at that time as a controversial Royal Navy base in Bahrain as Britain seeks to return to east of Suez.
Yeah.
Then just when was it? At the end of August, the UK secures permanent naval base east of Suez in Oman. So that was announced in August, and it was Michael Fallon that was there doing that deal. Defence Secretary strengthens relations with Oman with new agreement on use of strategically important port. Hashtag Global Britain. That was tweeted out by the Ministry of Defence on the 28th of August. So they've got their permanent base re-established in Bahrain. They're now setting up this base in Oman, and now you're talking about Aden as well. Patrick, what are they doing?
It's an arc. They're constructing a strategic arc right from the Persian Gulf, right around. I mean, that's what it looks like.
But they've got no ships.
They've got no ships. That's a good point, actually. So what they'll be doing is maybe hiring it out to the United States, or using it as a joint, or maybe for the European military organization that's coming online.
So this is a good point, because the latest reports we have are that even with the ships that they have, they've only got staff and engineers to put a third of them to sea at any point in time. So this must be viewed with the European military integration unification project in mind, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because France certainly has a more formidable seafaring military front than Britain does. Mm-hmm. And so Germany also, and also Italy. So in terms of the EU military integration, Norwegian Navy as well, playing a bigger role as well. So that I think you might be on something, Mike.
But it also gives them, of course, access to the Horn of Africa. So it's, you're right. It's an entire crescent. It's a control of that entire region, basically. Yeah.
And with Iran in their crosshairs as well down the road.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, because there's also talk. They also mentioned the island of Socotra. And also what is interesting is it coincides with the leader of Yemen's Ansarullah movement, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, issuing, and I actually read his entire speech yesterday, which is very long, but I thoroughly recommend reading it. It's available at yemenpress.org in English. But he issued a very clear threat to the UAE, to the United Arab Emirates, which is interesting because the United Arab Emirates is one. It's party to the Saudi coalition, which is waging the war of aggression against the Yemeni people. But it's also had a very Machiavellian role in fermenting the current spat between Qatar and Saudi Arabia. And basically, al-Houthi put out a threat to the UAE, a very clear threat. And he actually said that Ansarullah have the capability of reaching Abu Dhabi and elsewhere in the UAE. He claimed that Ansarallah have several domestically manufactured drones in its inventory that would become operational in the near future. This was a very, very sort of unveiled threat on the UAE. And of course, the UAE has now gone into panic, and it's called in both Egypt and Saudi Arabia, and is asking them for support in defending itself against Yemen. So again, you know, Yemen is another nation that has been completely underestimated by those that are trying to crush it. Because as Mohammed al-Wazir said, he said, nothing's going to break their spirit. You've starved them. You've bombed them. You've introduced, or effectively introduced, cholera because you've created the conditions in which cholera can flourish. But nothing is stopping them. You know, they're not going to give up. What have they got to lose? And that's what he said. There's no leverage with the Yemeni people, none, because they are refusing to go back to the status quo, where they are basically just a proxy of Saudi Arabia and effectively under control of the United States and the UK.
Not only that, Vanessa, but by poking Yemen and by doing what they've done, attacking it, now the there is a rally cry. There is a kind of noises now in the grassroots about Yemen wanting to go and liberate those legacy traditional ethnic Yemenis within Saudi Arabia. Yeah. The original Arabian Peninsula tribes,
exactly,
from the oppressive rule of this family of the Al-Saud.
Yeah.
And so this is what might be coming down the road, and I don't think Saudi Arabia has the stomach for it, quite frankly.
Oh, no. They'll jump in the sea. They're not going to stand and fight.
They'll be off to Saint-Tropez. Cashing their chips.
Don't take me down that route, because I could get very rude about the Saudi Arabia.
not only that, but the UAE, they're involved in, you know, taking down countries now. And so they're totally propped up by European and Western capital. The minute anything happens to the UAE, a lot of businesses will pull out. Tourism will, the bottom will come out of the tourism industry. They're so exposed in the UAE, it's not even funny. So, you know,
added to which, Pat, you know, a huge number of these private security firms have their bases there. Mm-hmm. All of these mercenary producers, a lot of them are centered in that region. You know, so that's also under threat. That there's a lot to lose here.
Yeah,
and you know, it could be as simple as they're shoring up their defences by trying to put in, you know, trying to insert a sort of a British military presence along with what we know is an existing U.S. military presence in Yemen. But you know, this is disgusting. Again, I mean, if this is happening, and it's certainly happening with complete media blackout, and I agree with you, Mike. I found an article from December 2014. With Foreign Secretary Philip Hammond talking about those bases in Bahrain and then in Oman. So, yeah, I kind of dug back because I was looking for something relating to this visit. And the only thing I can find is Michael Fallon sort of, you know, posturing and grandiosing at the arms industry fair, where, by the way, a huge number of protesters were arrested. So, you know, it's an interesting development, and I certainly think it's worth keeping an eye on. It may come to nothing, but I certainly wouldn't put it past them.
Well, we'll definitely keep an eye on it. We're going to wrap up this segment. We're going to take a short break in a minute and then finish off with Basil Valentine after the break. But Vanessa, thank you very much for this segment this week on the Sunday Wire. And especially thank you and to everybody who contributed those statements about the attack on the Syrian soldiers 1 year ago in Deir ez-Zor. Very moving and extremely meaningful, and we just a big thank you to everybody there, and also our condolences go out to all the families of the soldiers as well who lost their lives in that attack. But we really appreciate that, especially this week. Really, really important, very important to remember that. So, but Great work, as always, Vanessa, and look forward to seeing more of your work up at 21stCenturyWire.com. I know you're working on a lot of stuff right now, so it's just we'll hopefully be seeing some of that. There's a lot going on, folks. There's a lot going on, and Vanessa's covering it there in the Middle East. So all the best, Vanessa. Take care.
Thanks ever so much. Take care, both of you, and see you soon. And you, Hesha. Take care.
Okay, there she goes, ladies and gentlemen, Vanessa Beely. And we're going to take a short break and just connect before we finish up this week with Basil Valentine waiting in the wings. It seems that there is some palace intrigue brewing in Britain. What does it mean? Where is it heading? We'll find out after these messages. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. This is the Sunday Wire. We'll be right back after this short break.
After the rain now. Just can't stay the same. No, right now, something's got to change. 'Cause after the rain now,
everyone gets everything he wants. I wanted a mission. And for my sins, they gave me one. Brought it up to me like room service.
Captain Willard, are you in there?
Yeah, I'm coming.
It was a real choice mission.